This podcast is sponsored by Finomatch, finding the most suitable donor with the matching tool for the best teams.
Hello, and welcome to the Fertility Conversations podcast. The goal of this podcast is to create more awareness about infertility and to provide support to people trying to conceive. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you will be encouraged. And now, here is your host, Ola.
Welcome to another episode of the Fertility Conversations podcast. Today, we are joined by Dr. Edmond Edeosagi. Dr. Osagi is a medical director of Aurora Reproductive Healthcare, ARH, which provides specialist fertility assisted conception and gynecological services. ARH has clinic space in Manchester, UK, and also in Lekki in Lagos, Nigeria. Dr. Edeosagi also leads the Alexandra Endometriosis Center at the Alexandra Hospital with a team of consultants. His specialist interest areas are infertility, assisted conception, and endometriosis and pelvic pain. Dr. Edeosagi is passionate about equity in reproductive health provision, and to that extent, set up the entity called Ebony Concept that provides bespoke fertility services to people of Afro-Caribbean origin. Wow. So welcome, Dr. Osagi, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yay. So we usually start off by saying, tell us a little bit about yourself, whatever you'd like to share.
Okay, so as you rightly said, I'm a consultant gynecologist, and I've been a gynecologist now for well over 30 years. My specialist interest areas are reproductive medicine and surgery. So I do the full scope of reproductive medicine, including fertility profiling, fertility screening, fertility investigations, and all the aspects of fertility treatment, all the way from simple ovulation induction to IVF, surrogacy, and the full works. And I also specialize in reproductive surgery. So I do advanced laparoscopic surgery for endometriosis, pelvic masses like fibroids, ovarian cysts, and the two sort of complement each other, because as you know, sometimes when you're on your fertility journey, there's some gynecological issues like fibroids, ovarian cysts, endometriosis that can get in the way. Yeah. And it helps to be able to deal with those in-house, you know, with a seamless transfer from one to the other. So that's what I do. And as you rightly said, I do have a passion for trying to address some of the inequities in healthcare provision that we find, mm-hmm. particularly amongst our Afro-Caribbean population. And so I'm sure you'll ask me more questions about those.
Yes.
So I will stop for now and let you carry on.
Thank you so much for sharing, Dr. Osagi. And of course, as you shared, we know that you're the perfect person to speak with tonight and to get answers to many of the questions we have. Oftentimes, I think as soon as someone gets to age 40, it is highlighted as the area where perhaps things might get a little bit more challenging when trying to conceive. So today, of course, we wanted to focus on IVF after 40 and to see if there's anything different after that age, or if perhaps it's the same as any other age. So thank you for being here to answer our questions. One of the first questions that we have is that if you're treating someone for IVF after 40, what are the chances of conceiving? Is it the same as any other age, or is it a little different?
It can be different. And in a lot of cases, it is different. And maybe before we get into IVF after age 40, mm-hmm. I think it's really important that people understand why age is so important.
Yes,
and
thank
I'll
you.
I'll explain that so that people have a good understanding of why age is important. Age is the most critical factor that determines fertility outcome. In women, in couples, female age, it's the critical. And the reason that's important is a lot of women might not know that women do not form any new eggs in life. So all the eggs any woman will have throughout life were eggs that were deposited in her when she was a little baby growing in her mother's womb. And from the time of birth, a woman starts to lose all of those eggs. We record that maybe women will have an average of about 2 million eggs in both their ovaries at birth. But by the time that woman gets to the age of menarche, when she starts having periods, that number has declined to about half a million. And it's those 500,000 eggs that will serve the whole reproductive life of that woman. And once those eggs go below a critical number, and we reckon that number is about 1,000, the menopause sets in. And so you find that as women get older and they deplete their egg pool, it starts to impact on their fertility. The smaller the egg pool, the fewer the eggs that a woman has the ability to produce, whether for natural conception or for assisted conception, and the less the chance of a successful outcome. And as that number diminishes that a woman is able to tap into for her reproduction, the quality of the eggs also starts to reduce. So if you take, for example, a lady at the age of 25 who has very good ovarian reserve, it might be that her chance of achieving pregnancy, say we give her an arbitrary chance of maybe about 85% chance of achieving pregnancy in 1 year of trying to conceive. At the age of 40, that chance has declined to maybe about half of that. And the chance has not only declined, but each pregnancy that the woman at the age of 25 has perhaps maybe about a 10 to 15% risk of miscarrying, whilst at the age of 40, that risk of miscarrying has gone up to about 50%. So those are all really important factors why age determines fertility outcomes. And you see that translates into trying to conceive naturally and also translates into IVF. So that on average, the chance of getting pregnant at the age of, there are many things that determine your chance of getting pregnant with IVF. But if we just take age on its own, at the age of 40, if everything else is fine, meaning there are no issues with the womb, there are no fibroids, there's no endometriosis, there are no issues with the pelvic organs, the sperm is healthy. At the age of 40, on average, we're looking at a chance of maybe about 15 to 20% chance of pregnancy, compared to maybe about 40% chance of pregnancy at the age of 25. And once a woman's age gets past 40, by the age of 42, for instance, that chance has declined very significantly to about 5 to 10%. So you can see there is a significant decline. And we start to see that rapid decline in chances of fertility once women get past the age of 35 years. And that's why it's really important that women factor all of these into their plans, and are able to make proactive decisions about their fertility futures. For those who are maybe not ready to start the fertility journey, they could consider having a simple test to check their ovarian reserve, and deciding whether to freeze their eggs to give them an insurance for the future.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And it's so astonishing to see how the change and the drop, like how it reduces per year. Because even from 40 to 42 is such a huge difference.
Absolutely.
So time does really matter, and it's important that we know that. Thank you for highlighting that. If you're at 35 now and you're listening to this, and perhaps you're not ready to have children yet, but you wanted to at some point later in the future, would you then be recommending egg freezing then, as you highlighted?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think what I'll say is anybody at that stage who's not at the point where they're ready to embark on a fertility journey, just have a simple blood test. The blood test is called an AMH test. AMH is short for anti-Müllerian hormone. And that will give a really accurate indication of your ovarian reserve. And based on that, you can make decisions as to one, whether to freeze your eggs so that you have some insurance for the future, or two, whether to alter your fertility plans and bring them forward if your ovarian reserve is already on the low side. So it's a really, really important blood test, and I really encourage women to avail themselves of the opportunity.
Thank you for sharing. Very important to know. And of course, you also highlighted the fact that women are born with all the eggs they're going to have, so they can't really change that. But can we change egg quality at home? Is there something that perhaps we could be eating differently or
Yeah.
avoiding to try
Un un
to?
unfortunately, no. When you read some glossy mags, they'll tell you that there are some vitamins and there are some supplements that can improve air quality. It really isn't anything. The most critical determinant of air quality is a woman's age. It's just, it equates to aging of the eggs. The older you are, the older your eggs are, and the as they get older, the quality drops off, and it's just a function of age. And there's really nothing that we know that can reverse that deterioration in quality.
Right. Wow.
So I don't want this to sound very depressing for women. So but the beauty of all of this is when women are younger, they're beautiful, their eggs are healthy, their eggs are fantastic, and their eggs can achieve great things.
Right.
So the message should be, I don't want people to be despondent because of what I've said. The message, consider, freezing your eggs at a younger age so that even if you're not ready to start until, you're into your 30s, you have got younger eggs to fall back on if you have any issues at all.
Right. And of course, we know that you're a specialist in endometriosis and is Endometriosis Awareness Month. Talking about age and the impact on the egg quality, could just for people that might be younger listening and perhaps know that they also have conditions like endometriosis, can that potentially impact egg quality? And if they're younger, could they perhaps still be looking at freezing the eggs early, even if they're not 35?
Absolutely, absolutely. Endometriosis is one of those conditions that can diminish air quality faster than it will do on its own if you do not have endometriosis. So any woman who suspects they've got endometriosis, again, that's an added reason why you should, if you are considering having a family in future, that's an added reason why you should consider checking your ovarian reserve and being proactive about maybe freezing eggs. If your ovarian reserve is affected, or if you know you have endometriosis and you don't have any plans for fertility for a considerable length of time. And the test is a very simple one to do. And just to mention, since this is Endometriosis Awareness Month, let me just raise some red flags for endometriosis so that anybody who doesn't know or who cannot, who's not really sure whether they've got endometriosis can try and relate to these. It's not normal to have periods that are incapacitating. It's not normal to have periods that you cannot go out and do your normal activities, that stop you from going to school, stop you from going to work, stop you from going on your social activities. It's not normal to have so much pain during sex that you cannot engage in sex and have some enjoyment from it. It's not normal to have excruciating pain from orgasm during sex. It's not normal to have very painful bowel motions or bowel motions that are fluctuating between loose stools and constipation during periods. It's not normal to be vomiting when you're on a period. It's not normal to feel ill and like have flu-like symptoms, and to be completely fatigued during periods. Anybody who has any of these things, it's not normal, and those could be red flags for endometriosis. So the simple message is speak to somebody, see a specialist, get checked. And if it is endometriosis, the sooner it's diagnosed, the better the options for managing it, and the less the impact on your egg reserve and your future fertility.
Thank you for highlighting those, Dr. So again, I think that's really so important for many people across the globe. But I think even in Nigeria, oftentimes when people have normalized painful periods, it's really important and helpful to hear that it is not normal when it's painful and it's so difficult to do many everyday things. So thank you for highlighting those. For a couple over 40 again, because we are focusing on over 40 today. I know you mentioned AMH as one of the tests that women can take to try to have an understanding of their ovarian reserve. But for a couple over 40 that perhaps comes to you and looking to do IVF, what are some of the initial investigations that you might want to do or perhaps tell them to get done?
Okay, so for anybody who's having difficulty with conceiving, there are three basic things that need to be working well for conception to happen. One is the male sperm. The male sperm has to be healthy. And when we say healthy, There are three things we look at to assess healthiness of male sperm. We look at the number of sperm, we look at how well the sperm are moving in a forward direction, and then we look at the shapes of the sperm. And we have criteria we use to judge whether the sperm is healthy or not healthy. So again, for couples who are trying to conceive or who are thinking of conception, there's nothing wrong with the male coming to check his sperm to make sure everything's working well. Because if there are some things that are, if there are some subtle abnormalities, those are things that are easily correctable with just maybe supplements or lifestyle changes.
Right.
If there are bigger problems, then those are things that can be overcome with some forms of IVF. And it's better that those things are known about sooner rather than later. The other two things that need to work well are one, a woman has to have eggs that she's releasing regularly. So regular release of eggs. And then the third thing is that those eggs need to be able to come into contact with the sperm. So the woman's genital tract needs to be healthy. So her womb needs to be healthy. Her fallopian tubes need to be healthy and open so that the sperm can pass all the way through her womb into her fallopian tube to get to the ovary where the egg is released and fertilized, fertilize the egg. So those are the things we really check for people who are trying to conceive. And then if we find that any couple that come to us need IVF, in addition to checking those three basic things, we also do a screen of, so we do a virology screen. So for anybody who's going to have IVF, we have to check them for the common viral diseases like HIV, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, syphilis, chlamydia, gonorrhea. Those are basic things that we have to do by law. And that gives us a good basis to advise couples
Right.
as to what form of IVF will be best for them to undergo.
Okay, thank you. And I really love the fact that you also highlighted that it's important for the men to also come along and get some sperm analysis done. Because again, oftentimes you hear that the woman spends a lot of time doing testing, and perhaps the man might have some issues and they don't get tested for such a long time. So I'm glad that you highlighted the importance.
Absolutely, that's really important. And I would say 50% of all issues to do with couple fertility relate to the males. So it's really critical that the males get tested.
Thank you. And of course, you also highlighted that age impacts women and the quality of eggs. So, if perhaps they're doing IVF, would genetic testing be a necessity then for people that, because people again say that perhaps probabilities of having children with genetic abnormalities or chromosomal abnormalities might rise with age. So, will you say that genetic testing will be a standard for IVF after 40?
No, we actually do not recommend it just on the basis of age. So we do not recommend it. If there are other things that are at play, for instance, if maybe a couple have had multiple miscarriages and we cannot find reasons for them, or if the couple have had multiple IVF treatments where we have transferred good quality embryos and they're not achieving pregnancies, then we could do some genetic testing to drill down to why that's happening. But just on the basis of age, we do not recommend it. Some studies have actually shown that it can be more detrimental to do genetic testing because we know that as women get older, they have fewer eggs, and the quality of those eggs can be reduced compared to younger women. And when we do genetic testing, it can be quite an invasive procedure because we have to go into the fertilized eggs, into the embryos to get cells
Right.
from them to use for the genetic test. And that process is not an innocuous process. It can lead to damage to those embryos. So there's a risk of damaging fewer embryos that people have in doing those tests. So in women who are over 40, the best thing is to try and, what we try and do is to optimize a treatment package for them to try and maximize the egg yields to try and get as many good quality eggs as possible and fertilize those and transfer as many a reasonable number of good quality embryos for them. And then once they achieve a pregnancy, then you can start to do prenatal testing to look at the health of the baby. And if there are issues with genetic problems, then you can make decisions as to how to intervene at that stage. But we
I see.
don't recommend genetic testing just on the basis of age.
Thank you for clarifying that, because again, that's one of the things that we hear everywhere, that genetic testing is so important. But of course, as you highlighted, it might not actually be the best thing to consider. Thank you. What about add-ons? That's something else we hear, that perhaps IVF, some add-ons like, I don't know, embryo glue, certain things that would make the increase the chances of IVF success. Do
So
you
yeah,
recommend
add-ons.
that or?
So I mean, as everybody, as most people will know, add-ons have been quite controversial for some time. But there are some things that we in the fertility world will not consider add-ons anymore. You mentioned embryo glue. About 10 years ago, embryo glue was considered an add-on, but now embryo glue is used as a standard treatment for every IVF cycle because we know that it's advantageous. So everybody who goes to any standard IVF clinic will have embryo glue as part of their treatment. It is standard now. So
Would
it
have or should have?
would have. Every standard
Okay.
IVF clinic will use embryo glue as a standard for embryo transfer. It is a standard treatment now. So we don't consider that an add-on anymore. But there are some add-ons that are available. But again, those add-ons we wouldn't really utilize just on the basis of age,
Okay.
except for one perhaps. And this one is something that we have some anecdotal evidence that could help to prime the eggs in the ovaries of women who have very few eggs to try and help us achieve a greater egg yield for them. Because the simple equation of IVF is the more eggs you have, the better your chance of pregnancy. So if we can get more eggs from anybody, then we're improving your chance of pregnancy. So for women over 40 who come to us and who we find that their ovarian reserves are quite low, we sometimes will put them on a very mild steroid drug called DHEA that can
Right.
help to prime the ovaries, prime those eggs, and help us to get a slightly better egg yield. And I'll say that's probably the only add-on that I will use just on the basis of age for this group of patients.
Okay, thank you. And of course, another thing that we hear is that of course, we see stories of people having children at advanced age, perhaps over 50, even close to 60. And oftentimes people will say things like, well, my granny had a child at 60, or my mother had a child at 50. So some women might say that they want to proceed with IVF with their own eggs, regardless of the age. What would you say to women like this, that perhaps thinking that, well, it doesn't matter, I'm 46 and I'm still having my period monthly, I want to proceed with this because my mom was able to have a healthy child at 50 or whatever the age might be.
We do hear of those stories of people having natural pregnancies and resulting in live births of healthy babies in advanced ages. But as you know, they are rare and they're sporadic. And what we know from IVF is IVF gives us statistics that guide what we do. So there is no clinic in the UK that will treat any woman now with her own eggs over the age of 45. There's
Right.
absolutely none. Not because they're discriminating against women over 45, but because we know that it's almost impossible to get pregnant with your own eggs after that age. All over the world, there's been only one woman worldwide who has managed to achieve a pregnancy with IVF over the age of 45. And this was an American woman some years ago. No one else has done it. The oldest woman who has achieved pregnancy with her own eggs has been at the age of 45. And there have been very, very few of those. So most clinics will look at your ovarian reserve and look at your age and counsel you, give you advice, you know. Just to throw it in the mix, because IVF is not cheap and all of these things cost money. Okay. So if you take, for example, a 45-year-old who wants to try and achieve pregnancy with her own eggs, the number of IVF cycles you might have to go through to achieve that one pregnancy, when the there was a study that looked at the cost potential of, or the cost, the total cost estimate of doing all of those cycles, the cost of having a live birth. I think equated the woman at the age of 45 to needing about £90,000 to achieve a live birth, compared to the woman at the age of 30 needing about maybe £12,000 to achieve the same thing.
Wow, that's a huge
When you
difference.
look, exactly, when you look at that cost differential, and then you look at that woman who is at the age of 45 and what it will cost her to achieve a live birth using donor eggs, and that decreases significantly from that 90,000 back down to about 12,000. And I think once you introduce that cost elements, I think a lot of people think differently about maybe wanting to use their own eggs and give consideration to using donor eggs. Because at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself, why are you going through this? Is it the objective just to have a baby using your own egg at all costs, or to have a baby to fulfill your desire for a family?
Right. So if you do this testing and you realize that the person might need donor eggs or donor sperm, if someone is looking to use your clinic, do you have options then
We
for
do have
donor?
options. We do have options, but I'm sure you know as well that we have significant difficulties with recruiting egg donors in the UK.
Right.
And it's no different from anything that involves donation of any body parts, any tissue, whether it's blood donation, whether it's tissue donation, whether it's egg donation. There's just something about black people. We just do not like parting with any parts of our body. So we like to hang on to everything. And we have significant difficulties recruiting egg donors. So we do counsel people who come to us that one option they have is to consider finding their own donors. So their relatives, their sisters, cousins, or friends, anybody under the age of 35 who's healthy can donate eggs in the UK by law. And we can do the screening and we can ascertain whether they're suitable to donate eggs. If they cannot find their own donors, which most people cannot, then we'll have a discussion with them about what it looks like to be on the egg donation waiting list here in the UK as a black person. And I can tell you now that there are people who cannot travel outside of the UK who have been on that waiting list for about 5 years waiting for donor
Oof.
egg.
Wow.
The last year we have complete figures for the percentage the percentage of egg donors in the UK who were from the black community were only 3% of all the egg donors in the UK. So that's to highlight the issue we face. But over the years, and this is why over the years we have been looking at solutions for women of Afro-Caribbean origin, and that was really the stimulus for us to create this entity called Ebony Concept. That really caters to egg donation and surrogacy for women of Afro-Caribbean origin. We tried in various ways to look at different pathways to that to see if we could bring black egg donors from the African continent to the UK. But because of the law, because of the laws that govern egg donation here in the UK, it's not possible to do that. And that's because by law, donations are not anonymous in the UK. So any offspring that results from donated gametes in the UK, when they get to the age of 18, they can apply to the authorities to find out the identity of their donor, and they are able at that stage to contact the donor if they wanted to. And because of that, anybody who donates gametes in the UK has to be traceable. So anybody who's coming from any country that doesn't have similar laws will just not be allowed to come in here. So when we're not able to do that, the only option we had was to have a pathway where our patients here who need donated gametes are able to travel from the UK to, we set up this service in Lagos. To Lagos for a week during their treatment, to use eggs that are donated by an anonymous donor, because egg donation and sperm donation are still anonymous in Nigeria. There are no restrictions from the legal side of things. And we know that Nigeria has a population of over 200 million people. 70% of them are under the age of 30. So you can imagine the vast array, the choice people have. So in terms of being able to match people up with potential donors is very, very easy there. So for anybody who can travel at the moment, that's the best route for them to achieve their desire of procuring donor eggs for their treatments.
Well, that's wonderful. And so for anyone, regardless if they might be Nigerian descent or not, they can use this program. And is there some kind of,
Absolutely.
because I think people are usually concerned about what about the support, the travel support, or perhaps
Oh yeah,
accommodation?
I'll just highlight that. So we started this in 2018 on the invitation of some of the my colleagues who run IVF clinics in Nigeria. And over the years, we have evolved it. And one of the feedback we got from people who use the service is that it will be more user-friendly if there was travel support, if there was accommodation arranged. So what we do now is that we offer a premium package where people can elect to get picked up by a chauffeur from the airport. So all you need to do is to just take yourself to the airport in Lagos. You get picked up, you get taken to a hotel, you have your treatment, and then from the hotel you get taken back to the airport to board your plane to come back.
Oh,
So
amazing.
that's taken care of as well. So it works seamlessly, and the feedback we get is excellent. The results we get from treatments are excellent. Our average pregnancy rate from that service is about 60%,
Oh,
and
wow.
this compares very favorably with any across the world.
Wow, amazing. Good to hear that. And I think many people will be also really excited to hear that because for many, considering egg donation in the Black community, it just seems like impossible.
I've done a number of television and radio programs highlighting the difficulties with egg donation in the UK, and just because of the sparsity of egg donors we have. And we've done so many programs where we've gone into Black community organizations, Black churches, and to try and spread and get the message and try and recruit egg donors. And I'll summarize it by saying none of those efforts yield anything positive. So.
But still amazing that you're able to come up with this because lots of people travel abroad anyway. People do IVF abroad. So this is amazing that this option
Oh
is
yeah, absolutely.
available.
Before we came up with this, we used to send our egg recipients to places like Cyprus and Spain.
Yeah, exactly,
That
right?
was the only place we could find Black egg donors. And but you know, I was invited to Nigeria to speak to the Fertility Society in 2018. So I started discussing these problems we're having with my colleagues there, and they said, "Why don't you bring them to Lagos? You know, we got, you know, loads of potential egg donors. We can match them up easily." And that was it. And that's how it started, and it's just grown from there, and it works really well.
Good to know. Thank you. What about surrogacy? Is this also because I think you mentioned earlier?
Same thing. So we do surrogacy, and I mean, a lot of people say negative things about Nigeria, but anybody who goes to Nigeria regularly will know that there's wonderful things that are happening in pockets, and they're really pockets of excellence in Nigeria. And so when you go to Nigeria now, you have agencies that look after these egg donors, so they're not exploited and they're really cared for properly, and they have agencies that look after surrogates as well. So we use one of those agencies to match our patients who need surrogacy treatment services. So again, that works really well. And we have legal partners who draw up all the legal contracts and who can help people steer their way through the legal pathway for how to sort out the surrogacy and how to be able to bring their babies back after the babies are born. So those things are really well established now.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. Really, it's really important. And I think that for many people that get to hear and listen to this podcast and listen to you speak about this, they will really feel really pleased and happy that there are options for them to explore. Because again, oftentimes you just don't know that it exists and that these options are there.
Yeah. And I'll always take the point opportunity to drop this message that for anybody who is struggling with fertility, just go to a fertility specialist and just seek help early and ask your specialist for what options are available to you. And once you know what options are available to you, then that helps you to make an informed decision about how best to address whatever's going on. But just seek help early. And one of the things that frustrates me is when I meet people from our community who sit on their problems for ages and ages and ages. There are people who come to you 10 years down the line. And at the time they come to you, things have deteriorated so far. Their ovarian reserve is just at the point where you can't do anything to help them but to go down the route of donor eggs. And then it becomes a problem for how they make that happen.
Thank you. I think that's part of the awareness that we need to keep telling ourselves that it's okay to seek help. It's okay to see the doctor. You can
Absolutely.
pray and opt for science as well. It doesn't take away from the blessing of it all or miracle. So thank you. And for anyone listening that has now heard that there are options for black egg donors or sperm and even surrogacy, you're looking to then consider this or have a consultation with you. What is the best way to reach you?
So my clinic is called Aurora. So Aurora Reproductive Healthcare, and we've got a website. The specialized egg donation service is called Ebony Concept. So Ebony Concept also has a website, so people can look on that website, and all the contact informations are on either of those websites. So either Aurora Healthcare or Ebony Concept, and they'll get all their information and all the contact details for how to access us.
Thank you. We'll put all the details as well in the show notes so people can reach out and your Instagram details as well. So thank you so much for everything that you've taken the time to answer for us tonight, Dr. Sagi. But as a wrap up, for anyone listening over 40, perhaps has gotten that information or detail that perhaps their ovarian reserve is low and just wondering how to proceed, what advice would you give them?
So I think the message to take away from this is there are options, there are solutions. There is always something we can do. It might be something that they've not thought about, but there is always something we can do. So people should not feel despondent. People should not feel that there's just no solution for them. There are options. The best thing is get in contact with the fertility specialist, have a baseline fertility check. And the baseline check has to be done on both the male and the female, because, as I say, it takes two to tango, and both sides contribute equally to what we're talking about. And once you know what the baseline is, then you can make decisions about how best to address any shortcomings. And if it becomes evidence that you need help with either donated eggs or donated sperm, then this is where we can come in as Ebony Concepts to steer people in the direction where that's available to them. For anybody who cannot travel, we know the wait. We still get egg donors here in the UK. The waiting list is longer because we have much fewer egg donors, but again, it's not impossible to do so. But if you don't seek help, you do not know, and that's why it's really important to seek help early.
Well said. Thank you so much, Dr. Sagi. Thank you for your time today, for taking all the time to answer all our questions. Really appreciate it. Thank you for your dedication and passion in creating awareness and educating us about our fertility and options that are available, and for us all that you do to support individuals and couples that are trying to conceive. So thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the invitation. And I hope the information helps a few people this evening.
Definitely. I'm sure it will. Thank you so much. And we look forward to having you again in the near future.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Fertility Conversations podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at Fertility Conversations. If there are any topics you would like to have discussed, please send an email to fertilityconversations@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Thank you again for listening. Take care of yourself and do stay hopeful.